Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for checking out Add This to Your List. Hopefully, it's one of your most favorite podcasts, because it's definitely our favorite podcast. My name is Mark J. Parker, and I'm joined by my friends on both coasts. On the West Coast, we got Fumi Samano. Hey, girl.
Hi.
And on the East Coast with me, I got my Connecticut cowboy, Tom Chuba.
Howdy, y'all.
Hey, hey. How you guys doing? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. It's almost Christmas. Yeah.
I know, right? There's a chill in the air, of course, and I'm really feeling the holiday spirit this year, although...
Are you?
I was just going to say.
Can we talk?
Yeah, well, can we talk, everyone? Okay, let's cut the shit, okay? Let's just get right into it, all right, people?
Let's do it.
This is an entertainment podcast, but as you know, if you're one of our dedicated listeners, you know that we like to start with housekeeping and headlines. We are going to break down some recent headlines, then we're going to get into a shorter list of our top picks of the week, and then we're going to wrap it up with a more thorough, longer list of the best of 2019, because somehow we are already here at the end of the year. But guys, let's jump into it. So last episode, we did a little breakdown. We each picked one Hallmark movie, new movie to talk about and dissect and see if it was really worth our time. And Hallmark is in the news this week, and luckily, a lot of people, at least on my social feeds, are really talking about it and are upset. Fumi, do you want to do the honors and tell us what's going on?
Yeah, sure. So, as Mark said, last week we gave Hallmark major props, and cut to just
like literally 4 days later.
So, A Million Moms is a conservative group who decided to reach out to Hallmark, the network, and voice their anger and disappointment and frustration for Hallmark airing a commercial from Zola.com that featured two women on their wedding day having a kiss. And this ad didn't bother anybody, really. I mean, I don't think it made a big to-do in the actual life of logical people who have other things to do with their time. However, this 1 Million Mom group made a big hoo-ha of it, and Hallmark caved and removed the ad from their network. And so
yep,
now
they sure
trending
did.
On your Twitter is boycott Hallmark. So boycott Hallmark, people.
Yeah, hashtag
yes.
boycott Hallmark.
Yes, and I
what
need
do you think,
to
Tom?
Say that 1 Million Moms is, they're always trolling anybody that is progressive and any group or company or organization out there that is trying to embrace LGBTQ inclusivity. They don't even have 1 million members, so their name is misleading. Mm. It is not 1 million people against this. It is like a couple hundred thousand, I think, if that.
Right.
And shame on you, Hallmark. You are really lucky that we did this episode a week ago, because I would have boycotted that segment. You are really lucky, Hallmark, that I already done bought my Christmas cards, and I'm too cheap to done return them and choose other ones. But I can guarantee you, Hallmark, that I will not be buying your cards in the future. I'll go to the shoebox section that sells their cards for 99 cents. Thank you.
I'll make my own damn cards.
You are silly.
That
yeah, but
funny.
In all
yeah, or
seriousness,
that too.
It is a little ridiculous. I mean,
it's shameful.
Yes, there are people who, listen, Hallmark is a very conservative and traditional network. I think we all are aware of that. They're very family friendly. They have been, that has been their brand since their inception. However, we've got to come into, we're literally going into a new decade, like 2020. Families are different. Families look different. And if you're gonna say that you're a family friendly network, you need to encompass all families. And the
Amen.
American family looks very different in today's 2020 world than it did in the 1950s or 60s or whatever the house.
Great point. Yes, well said.
So let's be a little bit more, you know, like realistic about the world that we're living in today.
I think the most disappointing of all is, of course, these stupid moms. Fuck you, 1 million moms. But Hallmark, even just days before this, had said, we are totally open to same-sex stories and we're developing ideas. You remember that they were just on the news saying, we're open to it. So either that was a lie or they really were. And once all of a sudden the executives at Hallmark got nervous that it's like, oh my God, wait, we got to backpedal because now we're upsetting you know, people that keep us going, blah, blah, blah. And now that to me is the most disappointing. It's like, whoa, wait, you had an idea there, whether you believed it or not. And a lot of people were into that idea. And if anything, you were probably to get even more viewers, or you would at least be able to attain the same amount of viewers. Maybe some people would turn it off, more people would join. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
So now, and I'm seeing a lot of people are like, F that, like, goodbye, Hallmark. I'm going to just stop, you know? So if anything, you're pissing more people off now.
And all I'm going to say is about being family-friendly, being a family-friendly network. If Disney Plus is creating a Love, Simon series, come on, Hallmark. Come on.
Excellent point, Tom. You're right. You're so right. And I loved, Fumi, you had sent us, Netflix tweeted, like, hey, we have available content with lesbians hanging out, and it's Christmas. Can't we just love who we love?
Sure do.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, it's absurd.
It's a great time to be any other network doing holiday programming, because now it's like, yeah, we will gladly do that. Come watch us now. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, Hallmark, you'll be kicking yourself over this whole debacle. But yeah, so that's that. So I don't know how, yeah, they're lucky we talked about their movies last week, because this week we ain't talking about none ya movies.
None ya.
Bitches. And before we end that topic, we of course have all heard by now that Hallmark has done a 180 on this subject. The update happened as we were basically finishing up recording this episode. So we all read the articles and we're like, oh shit, well, we'll have to make a little update. So this is me announcing that Hallmark, by now you all have heard, has reinstated that Zola ad and has apologized for removing it and upsetting many of its, you know, supporters like us. And so that's a pretty cool big thing. They are vowing to work with GLAAD to better represent the LGBTQ community across their portfolio of brands. And they also will be talking to Zola to reestablish their partnership. So they're totally backtracking on everything they decided to do because of that 1 million moms group. And obviously that's a great thing. We'll see what really happens. But at least this is a step in the right direction. Come on, Hallmark. Don't do that again. Anyway, so moving right along, also last week we started dissecting all the new award show nominations. We talked about Golden Globes and Critics' Choice nominations specifically, and we also now, a few days after that, came out the SAG Award noms, which are also very interesting, and so we wanted to break those down and just share our thoughts. Tom, do you want to kind of take us off and just let listeners know, you know, the big nominees? It looked like Bombshell, surprisingly, is a big contender.
Yeah, Bombshell, again, some of these names that we've been hearing all award season. The Irishman definitely got some love, although Robert De Niro did not, correct?
Yes, interesting. Robert De Niro is missing from the list. However, awkward, he's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award that night at the show.
Maybe that's why.
Maybe that, I mean, I think it's also, it all depends on the SAG, like, nominee voting committee, so I guess he just didn't make the cut, but it's like, at least he's going to get that award, so, you know.
Yep, yeah. And then we have Marriage Story on the list with Adam Driver and Scarlett and Laura Dern getting nominations. I think the film is also nominated for Best Ensemble. Correct me if I'm wrong. It is, yep. Scarlett Johansson scoring two nominations, not only for Marriage Story, but for Best Supporting Actress in Jojo Rabbit, which you might hear about on this episode. Wink, wink, wink.
Ooh.
But mine, me and Fumi, I know, Mark, you were lukewarm to Euphoria, but Fumi and I were huge fans, and I gotta say, this is the first time that we've realized that Euphoria is being left out of the conversation this year.
I know, it is shocking. No, I ended up really actually loving the show. I think the ending for me, like, slightly fizzled, but no, overall, that was definitely one of the best shows, I'd say, of the year, and I am totally shocked, guys. I agree that it got no love. I know this year, now I can be open and honest about it because they keep telling you, be quiet, no one can know, we don't want any of the studios like bribing you, but I was luckily randomly picked to be on the SAG nominating committee for the TV side this year, and you better believe I've voted for nominations for Zendaya, Jacob Elordi, even Eric Dane, the whole cast. Like, I was giving them noms because there were some good performances, but nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder what that is. I don't know if it's the subject matter or people read it out by seriousness and the actors' pages, or it's just still too new, maybe?
Yeah, it's very surprising. And also surprising, I was surprised to not see much love for Big Little Lies performances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we like we've said multiple times, the season two wasn't amazing, but I was just surprised it got best cast, best ensemble, which I think it deserves. I mean, for the most part, a good amount of them had good things to do. But again, I was just surprised no specific shout outs really to any of them. But it's hard because I really do think it's weird. SAG Awards don't do a supporting actor and actress in a limited series slash TV movie. And they don't really do any supporting actor noms at all for TV. So everyone's lumped into just one category, you know, like, for example, Alex Borstein and Rachel Brosnahan are competing against each other for female actor. You know what I mean?
It seems a little too limiting. It seems like there's an imbalance, and I think they need to correct that, especially with how much content there is out there now.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? At least if they wanted to do just one general, kind of like the Globes do, they do like one general supporting actor in a TV series, TV movie, limited series. At least that's given some people, you know, a little bit more of a break, because like Patricia Arquette and Joey King, luckily both nominated for the act, but in most award shows, Patricia Arquette would be supporting while Joey would be leading. Now they're up against each other. So
and no
I think it's hard
Escape to Dannemora, huh? Or was that last season that it was?
That was last year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was last year. Yeah.
I was happy to see Schitt's Creek.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tom, yeah, you want to quick tell people you've been catching up, and what season are you on now? Are you all caught up?
I am 5 episodes into the 5th season, so I've got 9 episodes to go before I'm fully caught up, and then the final season starts airing on CBC on January 7th. And
wait,
I have
CBC?
To say, Canadian Broadcasting Company.
Oh, and also Pop in the U.S.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yep. Sure. Mm-hmm. So, sure.
Sorry, Pop.
We'll go with that. I started the show reluctantly because people had been telling me for forever that I would love it. And I had seen clips of Catherine O'Hara and even Dan Levy doing his thing. And I was like, this show's just freaking weird. And I didn't love season one, but Jeff did. Mm-hmm. So we kept going. And I have to say, I am a huge fan now. Huge, huge, huge fan. The characters grow on you. The show is incredibly funny. Once you start getting the humor, you just keep rolling with it. The episodes are 21 minutes each. That's why we've been able to blow through it. Because as we said on a previous episode, we're on winter hiatus from our other normal shows. So get to catch up. But Yeah, I'm glad. Totally. I'm really glad I did it. It's been a wonderful ride, and it's a wonderful, wonderful, heartwarming show.
Wow. Okay, so I guess I'll keep watching then, because I, like you, Definitely. Tom, didn't love the beginning. So, okay, cool. I'm glad to hear it gets better. And, I mean, Catherine O'Hara is literally perfection, so I'm glad she got a nom and that the show got a nom. And, Foom, I remember last year you raved about the Kominsky Method, and I feel like that show, SAG members just love the Kominsky Method, baby.
Yeah, I agree.
They are always nominated.
I haven't watched the second season so far. It's on my list. It's on my watch list, but we'll see if it holds up. But I did love the first season. It was so funny.
Yeah.
I'm also a little surprised, and this just dawned on me when the SAG Award nominations came in. I was like, oh, crap. I really thought Anne Hathaway would get a nomination for her role in Modern Love. Her episode.
Okay,
I know it was only a single episode, but I figured there'd be some way, whether it's supporting or however they would have figured it out, because that episode was really fantastic.
It was so good.
And I really thought she was going to win awards for it.
Such a good episode. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm sure she will get a nom for, like, I know at the Emmys next year, they always do like the guest star or whatever.
Yes.
Or,
yeah.
You know, like those standalone episodes. Maybe that's just more for that kind of show. You know?
I have to say, I think that because there is so much content, we're going to have to get used to a lot of things that we think should be getting recognized, get ignored.
Yeah, totally.
I just feel like there are a lot of missed opportunities here for a lot of shows. I mean,
totally.
I don't watch The Crown. I never have. But is it really that good that it has to get nominated for
every
single category across all
people
awards?
Love it.
Like,
people
come on. You know?
Uh-huh. I know.
So, and The Handmaid's Tale, although I do love that show, last season wasn't its best.
A lot of people said that,
wasn't. So do we really feel like we need to continue to nominate that? Like, if a show is going to be good, give them their dues. If they just happen to have a season that does measure up, then acknowledge another show. There's way too much stuff out here for the same thing to continuously get nominated year after year after year after year. We just don't even play those games anymore.
That's a great point.
I feel like those days are over of the Game of Thrones being nominated for every category for every season. I feel like we're reaching the end of that.
We should be.
And you can see it by the total lack, especially with the SAG Awards, total lack of noms for Veep, when Veep used to like rule the SAG Awards. Yeah. Like cast,
Modern Family
actress,
too.
Like, yep, totally. So yeah, but I have to say some quick little surprises for me, for mostly for the cast ensemble for a film. I was genuinely surprised. Hustlers, Little Women, and Knives Out were all missing from Best Ensemble, because to me, I haven't seen Knives Out. I obviously haven't seen Little Women yet, but so I cannot wait. But I just thought those to me felt like oh, they're so obviously going to be nominated for Best Ensemble, especially Knives Out, like really playing up the cast. Even though that might not be your typical awards movie, SAG always kind of, you know, does its own thing with the ensemble. But yeah, those were totally missing from that category, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we shall see. I think the next nominations, I guess, will be the Oscars, but those won't be announced until like early January, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll, of course, be sure to give you our thoughts on those, on the biggies. But that is basically it. Oh, also, real quick, shout out, because this is like breaking news as of an hour ago. You guys remember Chewy on the Chelsea Handler show? The little like Mexican guy? Yeah, he just passed away.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
sad. I just saw Chelsea Handler posted. Yeah. Oh,
I
mean,
don't know who you
geez,
are, but
R.I.P. Did you never watch the Chelsea Lately show,
no.
Tom?
Mm-mm.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
He
I was obsessed.
Very, isn't he young?
No, I don't think he was young. He just was like short, you know. But yeah, she just posted he passed away and she loves him so much, and that's very sad. I mean, he was her total sidekick, so
yeah,
really end of a decade, end of an era there. So RIP Chewy. But so that wraps up our headlines. Shall we get into our list?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, our final new list of 2019 begins now. Let's go with Tom. How about you start us off?
Okay, so I actually saw this movie weeks ago and loved it, and you reminded me last week that I have not talked about it. And I said, shame on you, Tom. You didn't even put Jojo Rabbit on your list, and that is my list item for this week. Jojo Rabbit. Fantastic film. Resounding add this to your list. I may be biased because I love Holocaust movies, but this film, guys, it is funny, it is heartwarming, it is sad, it just checks all the boxes, and it's one of my favorite films of the year. Quick synopsis,
wow.
I don't want to give a lot away because it really is a special film, and the less you know about it, the better, because that's how I went into it. It is about a little young boy named Jojo growing up in Nazi Germany. And as was customary during Nazi Germany, he is being primed to be part of the Hitler regime. So he's going to all different camps and classes to learn about Nazism and to train to be a future Nazi soldier. His mother, however, does not sympathize with Adolf Hitler's cause. And one day he comes home from camp, and his mother is out about in town, and he discovers that she is hiding a young Jewish woman in their attic. That's all I'm going to say. And from there, some craziness ensues. It is a comedy. It is directed. It is written and directed, and it stars Taika Waititi. He plays Adolf Hitler. And he's a satirist. I had never been familiar with his work until this film. So comedy is what he does. And I have to say, when I was in Toronto, everybody was buzzing about Jojo Rabbit. And I looked up the synopsis when I had a choice to pick my films after we had gotten press pass. And it kind of turned me off to see that there was a movie that was going to poke fun about the Holocaust. And I was like, you know what? I just don't think anything's funny about that. I think there are certain topics that are just always off limits, and the Holocaust is one of them. I'm not here for this. But then people kept buzzing about it, and it ended up winning the Toronto Audience Award at this year's festival. So I was like, there really must be something to it. I took myself to the theater to see it, and I loved it. Stars, I forget the boy's name who plays Jojo, but he is a fantastic actor. He is a newcomer who we're going to hear a lot. We're going to be seeing a lot of him. Scarlett Johansson plays his mother. She's fantastic in the film. What a wonderful character she plays. The young Jewish girl who's in his attic is played by Thomasin McKenzie, who Mark and I fell in love with last year. What the heck was the name of that movie?
Leave No Trace.
Yep,
yeah,
she
is interesting.
Incredibly talented. There was talk that she could even get a Best Supporting Actress nomination. I was really crossing my fingers for it. But that traction seems to have died down a little bit. Mm-hmm. The comedy works, and it works mostly because it does know that it's a serious topic, and toward the end of the film, it does take a serious turn. And I like that treatment. I like that they realize, a lot of people died in this event, and we can't treat it as all fun and games. But the humor is really funny. Rebel Wilson is in it. She plays a female Nazi soldier. Her lines literally made me laugh out loud. Like, at one point, she gives a little boy a grenade and is like, here, hurry up. Go give this to the American soldier. Go hug him and tell him that you have a gift for him. Which is so fucked up because she's sending, a little child to basically be blown up and killed and also kill an American soldier along the way. But that's the kind of humor that you're in store for. If you haven't seen it, I think you would both love the film. It really is special. Mm. It is very unique. It's very original. Good job to everybody involved. Go see it.
Nice.
That's great, Tom. Yeah, I've heard great things, and I can't wait to see it. Definitely. Cool. Okay, Foom, what you got for us?
Yeah, so my last pick for the year is Queen and Slim. Mm-hmm. It is the directorial debut of Melina Matsukuas. She is a well-known music video director. She works with Beyonce and Rihanna and a lot of artists, pop artists. And it is written by Lena Waithe, story by Jim Frey. Do you guys remember that author who wrote A Million Little Pieces?
Yeah, which they just made a movie, A Million Little Pieces. Yeah he was the one that duped Oprah, right?
Yeah. It's his idea and concept. So Queen and Slim is about a couple who go on a date. They met on Tinder. They didn't know each other prior to an event. That happens is they're on their way home from a date. They are having a little discussion in the car and they're joking around. And Slim, played by Daniel Kaluuya, misses a turn signal and they get pulled over by an overzealous police officer. And
love your choice of words.
Overzealous?
Yes.
Hmm. And from there, actions become more heated and heightened, and the police officer gets shot. And Daniel Kaluuya, Slim, and Queen, played by Jodie Turner Smith, they decide to make a run for it. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the movie, they go on this sort of, I don't want to say adventure because it's not really adventure. I mean, they are running for their lives, but they go on this situation where they're trying to end up eventually getting to Cuba to escape.
Okay.
And we meet a lot of characters along the way, a lot of really interesting ones. India Moore from Pose, which is another favorite of ours on the podcast. She's also in the movie, so she's an interesting character in the film. I'm not going to give away a lot. This is an intense movie. There's a lot of emotions and heightened feelings involved while watching it. It's really interesting kind of concept of the idea of black people fighting back to the police, because obviously black people are a lot of victims of police brutality and murder. So it's really a good movie. It's an ad. It's definitely not an easy watch.
Mm-hmm. I'm hearing
I definitely
that.
Think it'll spark a lot of conversation. I know that there's a lot of controversy surrounding the movie. I don't necessarily know if it's the movie itself or maybe just Lena Waithe. I'm not really sure. I'm still trying to figure that out. But it's a good movie. It's intense. My friends and I kind of just sat in the theater after watching it just for a little bit, just in a little bit of silence and just kind of
Is it emotional?
It is emotional. I mean, I didn't cry, but I definitely think that there are some people possibly could cry, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did. I mean, it's an emotional film. It ends in a pretty intense way. The very, very ending really makes you reflect. And I think there's a lot of messaging here, aside from the obvious in terms of, what black people have to go through with police, but also society and community, capitalism. There's a lot of messaging in this movie, which is really interesting.
Mm. Yeah. Wow, yeah, it looks and sounds great. And I don't think it got much awards love yet, right, Foom? I know
it did not. The cinematography is amazing. The music choice is amazing. I think Daniel Kaluuya and Jodie Turner did a really good job at acting. I know Melina had mentioned that the movie was made available for critics about on three different occasions, and nobody really showed. So I don't think that that's really that much of a shock for some people.
Yeah.
I think the subject matter might turn some people off, critics-wise. But I still think it's an important film. I think it's a really good film to go see. So yeah. Go see it.
Totally.
So cool. Fumi and I with those controversial picks, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. And so I'll wrap up our final new list of the year. I have a movie on my list. I was hoping to try to see the new Black Christmas because y'all know I like my horror and I love the OG Black Christmas and have a soft spot for the 2006 remake. But
this one's supposed to be really so bad though, Mark.
Well, here's the thing. It's interesting you say that, Tom, because I got nervous because I was reading comments. I was looking on Facebook at the ads and seeing all the hate. On IMDb, it is full of hate. It's attracting a lot of bad user reviews. But the critics are mixed. It has actually a better meta score on Metacritic than the 2006 remake because it's a very much a Me Too, like, yes.
Female
feminist
empowerment
horror movie. Yes, which I'm into. I think that sounds like a cool new version to it, but I just got nervous. I really didn't want to like go to a theater and like see something that could be terrible. So I'll see it at some point. But anyway, I stuck with a horror thriller. So I got something good for y'all. It's a new indie, very small film, but it stars Helen Hunt. So you'll see some familiar faces. You'll see Helen Hunt. You'll see John Tenney, who hasn't been around in a little while. You'll see Sam Trammell from True Blood. He's in it in a supporting role. But guys, add this movie to your list. I See You.
Okay.
It's called I See You. I know the title's kind of wah. I wonder if it maybe was called something else and maybe once it was picked up, maybe, you know, they changed it. But spooky movie. It's more thriller than horror, but it's definitely creepy. It kept me kind of up a little bit throughout the night. I was like, who's in the house? Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we happen to see it on Amazon. It's like on demand right now. So you can rent it for like $6 or $7. So we happen to rent it on Amazon because we had a little discount there. So it's on iTunes, all that jazz. But so it just came out a couple weeks ago. It premiered at South by Southwest earlier this year, which Tom will be going to South by Southwest in a few months. So there you go. But basically, I'm going to tell you the briefest of plots because I really don't want to spoil a thing. Watch the trailer, but I would actually say go into this super blind because it is twist upon twist upon twist upon twist. So it is shot in Ohio, but they make it seem as if it's kind of just any town USA. But I have to tell you, Cleveland, Ohio is actually pretty cute. So it starts with this 12-year-old boy goes missing. We watch him ride his bike through the woods and something happens to him and he is thrown off his bike. And from the get-go, we are not really sure what's going on, but we just see that action, and that's how the movie starts, and that's in the trailer. And now the cops and the investigators are looking into the missing case of Justin Witter. Now, we find out very early on, boys have been missing in this area for years and years. So now they're wondering, is this the same serial killer, kidnapper, abducting another boy? And so we meet John Kenny plays the lead investigator who's been investigating this case, and he is married to Helen Hunt. They have a beautiful, huge home with the worst chairs in the kitchen. I could not take my eyes off this furniture. I was like,
shame on you, set designer.
Oh my God. I don't know what they were trying to say there. But anyway, Helen Hunt is dealing with something, and it's sort of broken the family apart. So they got their own family drama as we hear more about this missing boy, and creepy things are happening in the house. Things are being moved. She's hearing scary things. Weird things are happening, and it's getting more and more creepy. Their teenage son is seeing and hearing creepy things. I'm going to leave you with that. I'm not going to tell you any more. I was surprised by a lot. Hopefully you will be too. I hope I'm not overhyping it too much, but check it out. Whether you pay for it now or see it somewhere down the line, I See You. It's a thriller you want to check out.
Where did you watch it?
I saw it on Amazon. I rented it on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Why did this not get theatrical release?
I think, you know, that's a good question. It was distributed by a company I've seen before, but they're small. I don't know how to say it. Saban or Sabin Films. So I think it was just, I think they just saw it as an on-demand release. And I think it might be in a few select theaters throughout New York and LA maybe. But honestly, I don't find that weird at all. I'm like, bring it on. Like, let me see the movie at home, you know? And especially a movie like this where we kept pausing to sort of talk about it and, you know, just think about it because it's creepy. It's so creepy, guys. So please check it out. I want to hear what you think because I did not see some of these twists coming. Good script. Good script.
Okay,
I
cool.
do wish, I wish the ending wasn't as abrupt, but hey, you know, so check it out. So that is I See You. Add that to your list. So that was our short list for episode 82. And those three picks were all ads. Just to do a quick recap, that was Jojo Rabbit, which is getting lots of awards love, Queen and Slim, and I See You. Those are three good movies to check out. Okay, team. Now we are getting into the best of 2019 so far. Okay, so let me just preface this. We haven't, of course, seen everything. We don't get paid to do this just yet, so bear with us. and of course, you know, I can't wait to see Little Women, but that's coming out in a couple of days.
Me too, I'm seeing it Christmas Day.
Me too, or at least I'm hoping to. Hopefully it's playing somewhere in Maine, because we're going to be in Maine. But at least these are, between the three of us, we of course have been able to see and hear and read a good amount this year. So now we are going to break down our top choices for movie, TV, other, which that category could be music, a book, a play, another podcast, you know, and then also we're going to just shout out our favorite kind of moment of the year, whatever that may be. So let's start with Fumi. Why don't we do movies first?
Okay.
So Fumi, tell us your movie and then Tom, I'll ask you for your movie.
Okay, so my movie pick for 2019 is, you guys are not going to be surprised by this.
No,
drum
I
roll.
Might pass out.
Avengers Endgame.
Wow, I am shocked. No way. Really?
I mean, if you listen to this podcast, if you know me, I really feel like you would be silly not to understand where I'm going with this. But I'm a huge Marvel fan. It is the culmination of this series.
Scorsese.
Scorsese, exactly. of this series, Avengers. And it was such a good film. I mean, it was the first film I ever needed to see. Opening night, I saw like the last showing of the night at like 11 something. The
Good
theater was packed full. You literally would have thought this was a Saturday afternoon. Every single theater, it was a 15 screen theater. Every single one was playing this movie. Every single one was sold out. It was such an event. It was such an amazing feeling to go into. I saw with my friends who were just as excited as I was. I laughed, I cried, I was shocked, I was in awe. It was such a great, great film.
It was emotional, yeah. Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow had some good, sad stuff
they
to do.
They really did. They had a lot of sad stuff to do. And, you know, it was a great ending and a great two-part for the first one. So, Avengers Endgame. I mean, I saw a lot of fairly good amount of movies this year. So, but I am also biased. But in terms of, like, emotional feeling for me and how much I love this series and these characters and these actors in this movie, this was it for me. I loved it.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. No surprise there. All right. Tom, what do you pick for best movie of 2019 so far?
Okay. So this was hard for me because, unlike y'all, my ass has been going to the movies all year long. I've been keeping up on my job.
Oh, my God. Every Friday.
Every Friday, every Saturday, sometimes even every Sunday. No, just kidding. Not that intense, but usually once a weekend. Anyway, so a couple of weeks ago now, I had the opportunity to go to Jacob Burns Film Center in Pleasantville, New York. Hey, Jacob Burns, we love you. And I got the chance to see a one-night-only screening that they were doing of a film called End of the Century. Now, in the way that you guys... We were shocked that Fumi picked Avengers Endgame. Hold on to your seats, because this is a gay film.
Oh.
Oh my God, that's so surprising.
Wow, I thought it was a war film. I really couldn't tell with you.
But no, guys, honestly, I
was like, End of the Century, sounds like war.
No, I could understand that, but I loved this film. It is a Spanish film. So it's Spanish language subtitles. You got to sit through it. It is about this guy.
It's not Italian?
No,
what?
No, no, I know. That's the second shock of the episode. So yeah. It is about this gentleman named Ocho who is vacationing in Barcelona. And he's by himself, and he goes on the gay apps and sees this guy that he's interested in, invites him over. This guy, what was his name? Javier. So Ocho and Javi is the pair that the movie follows. So Ocho invites Javi over to his Airbnb, and they hook up. They have a good connection. They start chatting, and one of them says, you know, why do I feel like I know you? And they realize that they do know each other because 20 years ago, again in Barcelona, they had previously hooked up another time. And here they are again having a connection.
Oh.
That's all I'm going to say. It is incredibly done. It is probably the best thing I've seen since Call Me By Your Name. And you guys know how I love that movie. I almost love this movie. I almost love this movie as much as Call Me By Your Name. It is so good.
Wow, I haven't heard about it.
Neither have I.
Look it up. The Rotten Tomato score is incredibly high. It made its rounds through festivals and was well-reviewed anytime that it screened anywhere. Really, really wonderful film. Really gut-wrenching. Really emotional. Just makes you think a lot about life and connections and human nature. And I just can't say enough about it. And the guy who plays Ocho, his name is Juan Barberini. He is fucking adorable. He's like my new crush. So that was a little bonus.
Wow.
But yeah, end of the century. Absolutely love this film.
And now, Tom, real quick, do you know how people can watch it? Is it on demand or streaming? Do you know anything like that?
Right now, it's not easy to see at all. There is no date as to when it's going to be released on streaming, when it's going to be released on DVD. I don't know the answer to that. I really don't know, but I'm hopeful that it's coming out somewhere soon because I want to own that sucker.
Cool. Well, let's hashtag them and let them know we're loving them. Mm-hmm. And I will wrap up our little movie segment. So as you guys know, I, unlike Tom, have not really gone to the movies much at all this year. This year, it might be the lowest amount of movies I've seen maybe ever in my whole life.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just been more into TV and, you know. But, and sort of music, I guess, in a weird way. But, so I have to say, though, one of the few movies I did see, I would say right now, the best of 2019 so far is Dr. Sleep. You heard about it from Tom earlier this year when it came out in November last month. I was able to see it soon after we recorded, and I really loved the movie. Now, I did not read the book. I'm pretty sure, I know people that have read the book, and I think they thought it was a good adaptation, but I thought it was creepy. I thought it was intense. I thought it was moving. I found it very mesmerizing and hypnotic. And I just thought it was such a cool sequel where it's not your kind of movie sequel where the same kind of things happen. It's a straight up continuation of this character's story. And it's going in a whole different direction. But the way the movie brought you back to a familiar location, which that's all I'll say, was so cool. Hearing the music, seeing the same visuals, it really worked for me. So I think that was a really strong film. If you remember, we were saying it didn't do so well. I hope it finds life, you know, on home video, because that was a really special film. Great performances by pretty much everyone in the movie.
That's
my pick. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Okay, so let's now move on to TV. Foom, what's your TV pick for 2019?
Okay, so this was hard for me. I went back and forth between Pose and Euphoria. I loved them both equally, but I went and decided my deciding factor was what movie literally did I like, what show did I like look forward to watching every week and like was giddy about, and it was Pose. Mm-hmm. So for me, 2019, all about Pose.
Wow.
It was such a good season. A lot of times you watch a show and their sophomore season is the one that a lot of people are like, mm-hmm. could leave, you know? They're just like, the second season is not the best. The first season of this show was so good. The second season was 1,000 times better. I laughed.
Wow.
I cried.
So much. Oh, my God.
There were episodes that I had to rewatch scenes 5 times because I laughed so much. Like, it was such a well-written, well-performed, phenomenal show. You got to give it up to Billy Porter for his acting. Like, the whole cast, it just blew me away. I loved every single episode, every single moment. It was like an event for me. I loved it.
Yeah, I was surprised he didn't get any SAG love either. Yeah.
Did Billy Porter not get nominated?
I don't think so.
Oh, wow.
And a cast in it, yeah. But controversial statement, everyone. I'm sorry to say, I stopped watching like halfway through season two. So maybe...
Really?
Maybe I'll continue, but it got really grating to me. I don't know. Maybe I just wasn't in the right mindset. I did get emotional during some of those episodes, but I think it was sort of jarring with like the comedy every now and then and then the sadness.
Yeah,
and I was
the
like,
tone shifts were interesting, but
yes,
overall,
I loved
it was a great season.
For me, though, tone shift, like, that made sense. That's life, right? They're talking, mm-hmm. I mean, this is the early 90s.
True.
They're in a situation where people that they know were dying. No one cares, but they still have to create moments of laughter and joy for themselves. So I loved
right.
it. I thought it was such, it's just done so well. So damn well. I loved
good.
It.
I'll definitely finish the season at some point. Definitely. Cool. Okay. I love that. All right, Tom, what is your TV pick?
So this was hard for me too, because I've watched a lot of TV, not as much as I've watched movies, but still. I went with Years and Years. And you'll remember, I put this on my list months ago on the podcast.
Yeah.
It basically, I'm not going to rehash the plot, but it's essentially a British show that starts in 2020 and then flash forwards 15 years to kind of show you the consequences and the results of this kind of global populism movement that we're having around the world right now, and shows you the negative effects of that. The show brought me there. I mean, it was really hard for me to watch some of these scenes because of the paranoia that I have about our current political climate that we're in. But I found it really important. I found the performances really good. I found the show to be really moving. Russell Tovey, his character, took me there a lot of times. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but something happens with his character that just threw me for such a loop and came out of nowhere. I was into this show. I totally see the world going there in the future. And I think it's important for people to realize what we're up against and kind of try and make the changes while we can before this ends up as our reality. So yeah, Years and Years. I was totally here for it. It's a quick watch, 6 episodes. It's a mini series, one and done. So yeah, that was the greatest thing I saw on TV this year. Definitely.
Cool. Wow. I still need to watch it, but I definitely want to check it out. I remember you both.
Boom. Did you
it.
Finish it?
Yeah, it was funny that while you were talking, I was trying to remember if I remembered the ending, if I finished it or not. I think I did. I'm pretty sure I finished it because the girl who was like, wanted to be like a robot or something or AI, I feel like I remember how it ended with her. So I'm pretty sure I finished it.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't love the ending. I will say that. The ending, it's like literally the last 5 minutes of the series kind of was like a womp for me.
Yeah.
But everything leading up to it was so good. So I'm not going to discredit a show because its last 5 minutes didn't live up to my expectations.
Okay. Cool. And for my TV pick, this actually wasn't that hard for me. There was a lot of great TV. I had a fun year with TV. I feel like there was a lot of good stuff I really enjoyed. But this came right to my mind, and I got to give it up for Fleabag Season 2.
Yeah.
I was behind on the Fleabag party bus, so I watched Season 1 and Season 2 this year. But Season 2 came out this past summer, and God, it blew me away. From that first episode to the final minutes of the finale.
Good one.
Oh my gosh, brilliant. And, you know, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone who hasn't seen Fleabag, because Tom, I don't think you've watched.
I tried watching the first. Is this a show? Did you guys both
Wait
love
a minute.
It from the very first
you
episode?
You have not watched Fleabag?
Right.
I watched the first episode and I didn't love it. So did you guys
Thomas.
Love the first episode?
Yeah, I was into it.
Yeah, I mean, I totally was into it. I was in the same position Mark was in. Missed the whole boat about Fleabag. Did not watch that first season, those 3 or 4 years it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I just watched it right before season 2. Because season 2, people would not shut up about it. They were like,
right.
Oh my God, it's amazing. I was like, what is this show? So I watched season 1 and season 2 back to back. It is so good. And by the time I got to season 2, like that first episode of season 2, I was like, I'm
God.
In. And by the end, you're totally right. Like, it is so hot. It is so sexy.
Yes.
It's such good acting.
And it's still so funny and crude, but my God, season two has such, really both seasons have such heart, but season two, the priest and the attraction and the romance and that finale, I am not going to say a thing because Tom has not watched, blasphemy, but that finale, oh my God, I cried.
Yeah,
it was my voice broke and I was like, oh my God, like I'm getting emotional now thinking, like that shook me. Yeah. So really phenomenal. I just bought the book. I highly recommend. There's a book of all the scripts of all 12 episodes. Yep. It's called the scriptures, the Fleabag scriptures, but it's every script and it's some of her written commentary and brilliant. That ending.
Oh. She's a brain that I would love to tap into and really think about and see how she thinks. Cause between that and Killing Eve and that she's writing the new Bond. Is she writing the new Bond?
Yes. She's one of the writers on it. Yep.
Like she is, the way her mind works is really fascinating.
Yeah. So, I have to say Fleabag season two. Wow. What a season. And Tom, like you were saying with Years and Years, each season's only 6 episodes and it's a half an hour show. So, I mean, it's a fast watch. Totally. So yeah, that is my TV pick. So now let's get into the other category. So music, books, plays, what do we got? Let's go with Fumi.
Yeah. So I picked Homecoming, Beyonce's, big headliner at Coachella.
Yeah.
It was done so well and I have to get up to my queen Beyonce. She's amazing. And while, Homecoming consists of her catalog that she's had out for years and years and years. There's something about the way that Beyonce performed live. I don't think there's, and I haven't seen like every artist perform live. Like I know Madonna knows how to put on a good show.
Oh yeah.
But there is something to be said about she leaves her blood, sweat, soul, tears on that stage. She is a performer, Beyonce. Like she gives it to you, the way she can dance, the way she can sing, her transitions, the way that she flows songs from her catalog that came out 15 to 20 years ago, whatever, how long she's been performing, to like her music of today, the way she interjects other artist songs into her music, which you would think that that was exactly the way the song was produced from like the first moment. She just gives a performance. And I loved this one. I didn't get to see her live at Coachella when she performed, but I really enjoyed this Netflix special of watching her basically have just given birth to twins, being like 80 pounds heavier than what she naturally is, and having to put on a show within like months on a Coachella stage, and all of the determination and the work that she put into losing all this weight and performing. I loved watching it. So give it up to Beyonce. She's fantastic.
Wow. We got a Uber fan. Cool. Love it. Okay. Tom, what is your other pick of the year?
So this one kind of comes out of left field, but I really loved the book Body in a Bathhouse. By a gay mystery author named Brad Shreve. Cool guy. He has his own podcast. So shout out to a fellow podcaster out there. He interviews gay mystery authors, actually. And there are a lot of gay mystery authors, apparently, because he has quite a few episodes. So good for him and good for them. But this book is essentially about a bathhouse in L.A., and somebody's murdered there. And this guy who's a private eye, he's former military. His name is Mitchell Riley. He's former military. He's, a PI. And he gets hired to figure out what the hell happened. I have to say, guys, it was fun. It was 400 pages. The ending surprised me. I had no idea where it was going. I really like this Mitchell Riley character. This is Brad's first book, and he's going to start a series of Mitchell Riley gay mysteries. So I'm totally here to read more. The dialogue is good. It's witty. There's two or three really, really sexy sex scenes that I was not expecting. They're hot. So I was like, okay, I'm totally into this. So if you're looking for like a beach read over the summer, or you have like a long airplane ride, you know, those kind of books that you don't need to focus, not like a Call Me By Your Name where it's have not to hard. Read everything so intently. Yeah, it's not philosophy. It's not rocket science. It's just a fun read. It's breezy. It'll make you laugh. It'll shock you. I totally dug it.
Cool. Nice. That's interesting. Sounds like a real page turner. Mm. Okay. And so I will wrap up our other segment with, I'm going to go back to music. I'm going to go to the music side with Foom. I thought, I actually didn't get a chance to talk about this on the show earlier because by the time I listened to her new music, it was already kind of like old and it just never was a good time, you know? But I want to give it up to my girl, Miley Cyrus. Mm. I know. Mark loves Miley. She's just being Miley. No, her EP this year, She Is Coming. I thought it was great. And especially the song Party Up the Street. Party Up the Street was like the song of the summer, at least in my world. That was a great song she did with Swae Lee, Mike Will Made It. I don't know. But Party Up the Street. I don't know them, but I know Miley. I know Swae Lee, but Party Up the Street, I thought it was such a great song, and I loved her song Mother's Daughter. Ooh, so good. I just thought this was a good, it's only maybe 6 songs. She did a fun song with RuPaul called Catitude, not
Catitude,
as good.
I like that song.
Yeah, it was fun. It's not as good as the others, but wow. Mother's Daughter and Party Up the Street, they just were on replay in the car this summer in Maine and in New York. And like, I just feel like Miley, you did a good one this year. So props to her and her music. And so before we wrap it up, let's get into our favorite moment of the year. You guys have a little favorite moment or, you know, something like that? Let's go with Foomy. Yeah. What do you got?
My favorite moments of the year were Black Twitter reactions. For those of you who don't know what Black Twitter is, it is Twitter, essentially, just with Black people tweeting about pop culture. And We are hilarious. A lot of the memes and things that you see that, like, you know, are on Twitter originate from Black Twitter. And so we just have had – we have a good year every year, honestly. Sometimes, like, I'll never forget – Thanksgiving with Black families. That was about 2 or 3 years ago. Like crying, like stomach hurting over, like I cannot breathe crying from laughter.
Yeah.
This year, they brought us a lot of really good, funny moments in Black Twitter. You know, just commentary from pop culture. Like, remember when, not that anybody cares, but like, that's also part of why I love Black Twitter so much, is because they'll take moments that you don't give a shit about and just make it funny. Like when Kylie Jenner broke up with her baby daddy, and like the way that Black Twitter tweeted about that was hilarious.
Uh-huh.
Like a baby and like a grown man standing on the baby's shoulders. And it's like Travis Scott and Stormy spying on Kylie and Tyga. Like the most hilarious, ridiculous, silly, stupid things. And also just like memes that they use to incorporate like everything that we all go through. It's like a clogged nose, like a clogged nose, a stuffed nose. Black Twitter can make utterly hilarious and funny. Mm. Do you remember when?
Yeah, they definitely can.
Kiki Palmer did that whole thing with Vanity Fair about not knowing this man. Sorry to this man.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was like that was a hilarious day on Black Twitter. Just utterly hilarious and funny. So I just have to say, Black Twitter 2019, thank you for making me laugh as you do every single year.
Love it. That's a good pick. Okay, Foom. Cool. Tom, what's your favorite moment of the year?
So this may be cheesy and corny, but I have to say Gaga and Bradley's Oscar performance of Shallow really kind of took my breath away.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, just plain and simple. Like, I'm not going to give some long-ass explanation. Like, I thought that performance was fire. I thought it was well choreographed.
I agree,
People talked about it for, like, days after, so you know that's what it was supposed to do. And, you know, it was a success on that front. I thought Gaga looked beautiful. I thought Bradley looked handsome as all hell. Their singing game was on point. I really dug it. And I didn't love that song. The song's okay, but I didn't love the attention that song got because I thought there was a lot better music in the movie A Star Is Born than that song. But, I mean, they brought it at the Oscars. So, yeah, that was my moment of the year, definitely.
Totally. I won't shade you like Foomy did. I thought that was a big moment.
I didn't shade. I just laughed at your reaction.
Oh, okay. No, yeah, I agree. I mean, they were a little orange, as we said before. They were quite orange on stage. But yeah, that walk from the crowd and close up. Oh yeah, they worked it. I'm still waiting for them to get together, but they did admit that all was just an act. So
Maybe that's our 2020 moment.
No, maybe.
I don't think it would be our 2020 moment. I think it might be your 2020 moment. Let's clarify.
Yeah. Let's just calm down, Tom. Okay. Cool. No, that's I hear you. Great. And so my best moment of the year, it's a tie. I know. I'm sorry. I just can't pick one. They're equally lovely in my mind. So y'all remember I talked about that funny Rebel Wilson movie, Isn't It Romantic? It was silly. It was fun. I had a great time. I love anything with like spontaneous 80s musical moments. And so I just have to give it up for the end credits of the movie. They do like a whole Madonna song and everything, but then they go into this great dance and lip sync to this song that I am not ashamed. I listen to every now and then, especially when I'm feeling kind of down. My Way by someone random, Alana something. I don't know, but the song's called My Way. It's on the Isn't It Romantic soundtrack. Listen to it and you will be living. I'm gonna do it my way is basically the saying. But I just love they all were dancing in the streets of New York, and I was just smiling ear to ear, and
yeah,
I just
Liam
really wanted
looked
to
hot
be
in
there.
That scene.
Yeah, everyone looked great. Liam had like the saxophone. I just loved it. It was fun. So that moment was a really fun moment for me this year, and that is tied with now a really touching moment, a very sad moment that Fumi and I will attest to. I thought Broad City was, of course, one of the best shows, definitely of the decade, if not ever, in comedy.
Totally.
And it had a touching finale. Those last few episodes, as Alana and Abby were parting ways, were really touching. And those final minutes of the finale where they're on the phone and they're in separate places and their friendship is still going strong, it just changes, I thought was really so perfect. I thought it was awesome, and I remember just it ended and I was just staring at the TV and I was like, yeah, like that feels like the greatest way to kind of end it there.
Totally.
You know?
I loved that show. Aww.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So hopefully we see them again. I mean, can these girls get any sort of nom, or can they at least host an award show? Jesus.
I know. Why do you think that is, that they don't get love the way that like...
It's weird, right? Like, yeah.
Tina Fey and what's her name?
There's too much content out there,
there's
guys.
Too much, yeah.
Simple.
I think much like Euphoria, I think Broad City was just funky, too funky or something, and people were like, huh? But at least
Yeah, but in all fairness, Schitt's Creek is really funky and quirky and weird, but it did take them 5 seasons to finally get some recognition.
True.
So.
True, yeah. Yeah, so gotta give it up to the Broad City gals. And then right before we are wrapping up, I'm just gonna shout out, we did a little small poll with friends and followers, and we asked them what their best picks were, and actually not a lot of things connected with our choices. It looks like Joker was actually the most popular vote for best movie of the year. There was Joker, Marriage Story was brought up, Spider-Man Far From Home. But Joker was the most popular choice. For TV, Succession was the most popular choice, and
show.
I still haven't seen it. I need
to see
it. I
know everybody raves about it.
Yes.
Just have no
but
interest.
It also got no love, awards love.
Yeah, isn't that weird? I wonder if people just... Well, also, in general, HBO didn't get a ton of awards love when you think about
no.
it. Not even for Game of Thrones, Veep, like none really
Lies.
For Watchmen. Yeah, very little for Big Little Lies. So, yeah, Succession was a popular choice. Let's see, for music, a little bit of everything. We had Billie Eilish, Sam Smith, even Katy Perry. So yeah, those were the big ones. Beetlejuice was a popular pick for theater. Book was kind of all over the place. Podcast, other than Add This to Your List, of course, was another plethora of choices. So those were the big ones. Joker, Succession, those were definitely the more common choices of our little poll.
Okay.
So thanks guys, if you filled that out and, send us your faves of the year. And the year isn't over yet, so I'm sure in the new year, after the holidays, when we've caught up on more things, we might be like, actually, on second thought, I liked this.
Yep.
You never know. But that is it. That's episode 82 of Add This to Your List. Thank you guys for listening. We have one more episode of the year, so stick around. You'll hear that in the next week or so. You're not finished with us just yet.
Yeah.
But have a great holiday. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy everything. Happy day off. Hopefully everyone's
happy
got
Festivus.
At least a day off. Happy Festivus. Exactly. Keep following us on social. You'll see some extra bonus content there. And please, if you haven't yet, please do give us a review, a rating at the very least on iTunes. It doesn't need to be 5 stars. If you think we're only 4, Okay, I'll take it. Whatever. But just leave us something, please, because that does help boost our popularity in the search results. So that would be great, y'all. And I think that's it. Anything else, guys?
No.
Nope. All
right. Happy holidays, y'all.
Happy holidays. Peace out. Peace on Earth.
Jingle, jingle.